Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Woodard, executive coach with Advisor Game Plan. Welcome to the Thriving Sports Podcast, our public podcast available to everyone. We do have two podcasts. Number one is a client-only private podcast called Thriving Coaches. And number two is this public podcast available to everyone. In this public podcast, in each episode, we'll be talking to a successful coach or leader about specific ways they enhance their team's culture and player development, as well as many other valuable topics.
And I'm Brian Willett, founder and CEO of Advisor Game Plan. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to sit back and learn from each of these episodes with these amazing coaches. Thank you for joining us as we dive deeper into these areas that can lift a team from average to good to great.
Hello, everybody. Here with Coach Nate Linzer, Nebraska basketball assistant, fourth year already on Husker staff. I believe he was also with Coach Hoiberg at Iowa State and also the Chicago Bulls. Spent a couple years somewhere I'm familiar with in the high school level in Iowa. Great state for basketball. Spent a ton of his career being involved with player development. Now is extensively involved, I believe, in virtually every area. Really a right-hand person for Coach Hoiberg, just right there at his side in almost every area of the program. Primarily does a lot of defensive scout and prep. He and his wife, Jackie, have three daughters. First off, Coach, how is that with being the only male in that house?
Yeah, and when we first started that thing, Coach, well, first of all, thanks for having me, Coach. Obviously, being relatively new to the state and now in my fourth year here, but still even in year one and year two, being in your gym at the Metro Tournament and things like that, I've looked up to you from afar and then on a firsthand basis getting to see you last couple of years of your tenure, just learning a lot about you and what you've done for the state and this and the high school basketball here, and just the impact you've made on a lot of people, and you've always welcomed me with open arms and been a great person to me, and that's made the transition coming to a new place great. So, but with that being said, being the only girl in the house or the only boy in the house, to your point. And we even started with two dogs and a cat, and they were girls too. So now we lost all three within the last 6 months last year. So now we have a male cat. So that's the one thing that I guess I have on my side. But no, I get males at work, and then I get females at home. So it's a good balance that way.
That's awesome. And I just want to say, before we kind of head in, dive into this, Coach, that believe me, in the high school coaching community, you're greatly appreciated because in 4 years, you have just been a tremendous ambassador for Nebraska basketball to the high school community. And I think that was something that was sorely needed at this particular time. And just constantly hearing how open you are, available for whether it's questions specific or relative to Nebraska basketball or just involving basketball in general. And so again, that means a lot to the high school coaches of this state, and it's much appreciated. Why don't we just begin with just a little update? We were visiting briefly. It's been a little bit of a snag, a four-game stretch here, but where do you see the team right now? And is there anything that you're focusing on, or you and Coach are focusing on as you head even deeper in here to conference play?
Yeah, I think the Big Ten Conference in general, it's a little, this is my fourth year of it, and I've been in the old Conference USA, which is much different than it is now. Even the real original Conference USA when Marquette was in it, and St. Louis and South Florida and Cincinnati and Louisville, to the second version of Conference USA with Memphis, with Calipari doing his deal there, and those good teams with UAB and UTEP. And then I was in the Big 12 with Coach for his last 2 years at Iowa State. And so the Big 10, the last 4 years, and you know, each conference, I don't care what conference you're in, you know, each conference knows that it's it's difficult basketball, but I have such a level of respect for all the programs that are in our league and the coaches that are in our league. And with that, you're going to have players. So, I mean, this is not something that is super unique. I mean, maybe my first year here, you have a idea of what you think a conference is like, but now that I've had a couple times through it, I mean, it's just, this is a grind. And I always say this, every night someone's getting, good teams are getting beat in this league. And that's every game too. Like there are no gimmies, no layups. You just winning on the road is hard. Winning at home is hard. It's a grind and because of it. And I think with that being said, you know, college basketball, it's a 30 plus game journey and you're going to have some ups and downs and ebbs and flows. And I think anytime you're dealing with 18 to 22, 23, and even 24 and 25 year olds in today's day and age, you know, just being real with where you're at, not letting your highs get too high and your lows get too low, and understanding, like, you know, for us specifically right now, you know, we're going through it a little bit. We've been in some difficult situations. We've been pretty close in some of these games, and then some we haven't played to our capability. But I think anytime you feel like you need to get back on track, it's always about going back to the fundamentals and the basics and doing simple better. And not panicking, but staying the course and just continuing to, yes, maybe push some different buttons, but overall, stay firm on what you believe in and do what you do and try and do it better.
Well, I mean, Coach, as you know, I mean, this business coaching is such a thin, when you're in a really competitive situation, it's such a thin line between what is perceived as success and failure. And it can boil down to, does a certain kid hit an open shot on one night and maybe he doesn't on another night, or does one of their kids go off who's normally a 28% 3-point shooter and he's 5 for 7 the night you guys play him? Or there's so many variables and factors. And when you have a narrow margin because of the competitive nature of your conference, I don't know that unless you just have that special, unique team, and even then, if you can really go through very many seasons without a period kind of like this.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, and something that, you know, that I've had a philosophy on for quite a while, because I think in general, each basketball season, I don't care if you're coaching high school, college, or pro, your team is going to have certain nights where the ball goes in the hoop, and then some nights where maybe you feel like you're stuck in mud. So I've got a little bit of this theory of, you know, the 80-20 rule, meaning 80% of the year, your team is going to fire at kind of what they are and what their capabilities are and who you truly are. And then there's going to be that 10% where your team is not very good. And then there's going to be a 10% where you're clicking and you're humming pretty good and you got things going. And the reason why I bring that up, whether it's a 20-some game high school season, which I've been a part of, whether it's a 90-game NBA season, which I've been a part of, and whether it's a 30-plus college season, there's that 80-10-10 that comes in. And I guess the thing that we always think about as coaches is that we're always focused on our team and our own situation. But what happens throughout the season is another team might be in that 80-10-10 as well. So there's an element of, how do these upsets happen?
And where you catch them.
Right, exactly. And when you catch them, whether they're coming off of this situation or that situation, what travel, all these factors are. So the reason why I bring those things up is it's if you get too high with your team, and I know you specifically have had very talented teams, but, you know, human nature is sometimes the biggest opponent we all face as coaches.
Absolutely.
And understanding that, yes, maybe it looks good on the scoreboard, but knowing deep down what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish with a given team, if you let that complacency bug slip in, then you're ultimately going to fall short of the overall goals, or a stretch in your schedule where you know, like, oh man, this is going to be tough, and we've got to weather some storms here, knowing that if we can come through this and see it on the other side, that, hey, we do have a good game. And then just like anything, the schedule starts to flip. You know, Coach Floyd had a deal and Coach Tim Floyd, who's a lot of coaches know, but I don't want to assume anything, like he's a guy that I was going to go and be a manager for at Iowa State. But I grew up listening to him a lot, post-game radio stations, things like that, coaches' clinics and all that. But Coach Floyd had a thing when it came to the conference play, especially, like, you got to be careful of road games and home games. And his deal was this point system, and Coach Hoiberg still uses this today, and we use it just to kind of keep us going. But essentially it is, you know, you're plus one if you win on the road. You're not supposed to win on the road, and at least in league play and at our level. And then home games, you get a zero for a win. You're supposed to win at home, and it's a minus one if you lose at home. And you know, we're in a stretch here where three of our last four, you're going to Iowa, you're going to Purdue, you're going to Maryland. Those are three very difficult places to play. You know, the biggest thing that we got to correct is, you know, we lost at home to Rutgers, so that ends up being a minus one. You know, we took care of business against Indiana and UCLA at home, and then we haven't broken through on the road. But there's going to be more opportunities to get wins at home and things, or wins at home and things like that. And then ultimately, if you want to move up in the rankings, though, you got to get some of those plus ones and things like that, and steal some other roads, so that way you're in that upper echelon like we were last year.
Yeah, Coach, I really appreciate that perspective. And even in a profession, obviously, where winning is ultimately what we're judged on. I talk with my buddy, Coach Klein, who's now the head coach at Bellevue West, and they took a tough one on the road at AL the other night. And one of the things I tried to get across to him, Coach, you came closer with this team to there. I know you don't think you played real well, but we played worse the year we were undefeated on the road against Westside, second or third last game of the year. But we were so much better than most of the other teams. Well, we were able to skate by and get a win. But you remember how we felt and how often we talked that next week, that if we don't get some things corrected, we're going to lose when we really don't want to lose, when guys you really don't want to lose. But that perspective, it's hard when you're in the middle of it. To convince Coach that, you know, guys really competed, they played well. They just had, and it was an overtime loss. I mean, sometimes the other guy gets some credit. And you've obviously played some really good teams. I know there's some concern with a game or so in there, but you're going to turn it around. You guys have done it before, and I think we're excited to see what the Huskers do the rest of the season.
Well, I think the thing, and as I'm hearing you speak and talk, and it's, you know, when you're going through it and all that, but like at the end of the day, the standard is the standard. As coaches, we know when our team is performing to their capabilities, and yes, we are ultimately judged by wins and losses and points on a scoreboard and things like that. But I think as humans and as teachers, which I'd like to think the best coaches are teachers, and they look at it that way. Like my thing, even for our guys, is being able to respect 94, to leave it on the court and play to the best of our abilities. And then at the end of the day, the results will take care of itself. Like, I'm not into celebrating when we get lucky, but I'm also not into overreacting when I know we've maybe done everything possible to put ourselves in the best situation possible. Because to your point, like, this is competitive sport. The other team's trying to win, and it's easy to look through your own eyes and fans and people and everything, always like, yes, they're so dialed in their own, and that's what makes it all fun. But at the end of the day, the opponent, the other programs, the other teams are playing, I have the same goals, and if it was all about winning all the time, then we always knew who was going to win and who was going to lose, then that loses the whole gist of what sports is and what life is.
No, and you said the opponent gets a vote, and we used to tell the kids in for several years. I think they looked at me like they thought I was lying, or that I was just saying some coach thing. But I'd say, guys, I'd rather lose playing the way that we want you to play than win and play with a sense of entitlement, or without great effort, without being good teammates. I'd rather lose the other way. And I know you don't think I'm being truthful with you. Now, I don't want to lose. I'm not trying to tell you that. we all want to win the right way, but boy, just winning in and of itself, even though, again, that's what we got to do. That's what, the people that hire us expect us to do and all that. But I think if the culture's right, the system you guys have is right, the values in the program are right, so eventually, this too shall pass.
Yeah, exactly.
The coach, you've had a widespread breadth of experience in both the NBA and collegiately in the area of individual player development, which is something that I've always just really, really enjoyed as well. Can you speak to just this area? We always used to talk about with players. Do we want to focus on something that's already an existent strength with a player more, or improving something that would be recognized as an area of growth needed for that player?
You know, player development is such a buzz term in our profession, right? I mean, it's felt like 10, 15 years ago, everyone was talking about toughness and Jay Billis's toughness and what that means and what that definition is. And what I found is, like with player development, it's some of it's been a label, some of it's been a narrative, all of it. I spent my time with Coach Hoiberg at Iowa State. When I went to Iowa State, I had already coached 6 years of Division I basketball at the University of Southern Mississippi, and I had been a high school coach at three different places before that. So, I mean, my path has bounced around in my now 24th year of coaching, and I've worn different hats and I've done different things. But when I got with Fred at Iowa State, I had a lot to do with his player development and how he saw the game. Larry Eustace, who I was with for 6 years, was much different coach, extremely successful in his own way, but he saw the game much differently than Coach Hoiberg did at Iowa State. So for me, it was a great experience as a 34-year-old GA to kind of relearn some things.
Sure.
And, you know, player development to me is fundamentals.
Yes.
Player development to me is relationships. Player development to me is psychology, trust, being able to handle what all's thrown at you. I have different philosophies that I think of. Like I hear sometimes a player development label with me, and I think it's important that people understand that at the end of the day, I'm still a coach. And then if I need to be an offensive guy, I can be an offensive guy, defensive guy, defensive. I strive to be the most well-rounded coach that I can be. And I think that's partially to my high school coaching background, how I just started. Like, you are the CEO and you do everything. And you you get a few, if you're lucky enough to get a few assistants that can, you know, get out of their schedules and are willing to to help out on pennies on the dollar. But at the end of the day, as a high school coach, you have to wear every hat and you have to do everything from practice plan to turn on the lights to sweep the floor to all of it. But with that being said, when it comes to player development, like what I've found is there's individual part and whole when it comes to player development. I think some coaches are really good at individual stuff, which means they can do workouts. They can stimulate the player to want to work out, to want to get in the gym, to do ball handling thing, to do shooting, maybe work on their skills. But sometimes those individual player development coaches don't know how to get it into the whole. Then there's also these wonderful player development, like whole coaches, meaning they can draw tricky plays. They can put their players in unbelievable situations team-wise to perform, but really don't know how to teach the micro skills that go into, like, once again, the shot or the timing or the setup or the parts that go into what needs to be done. Maybe they can draw it on a whiteboard, but they don't really know how to relate it to an individual level. Maybe it's not the play not working, but maybe the timing, the sequence, and all of that. And then there's the hole, or the part in between, which that's the quarterback receiver relationship. That's the pick and roll ball handler with the roll man, the screener, getting the timing so we don't get a moving screen. So we get the pick and roll happening at the right time and the right place on the floor and being able to hit all the right reads, and just the timing of, like I said, the quarterback throwing to the receiver and knowing where the receiver wants it and when the quarterback wants it and where he wants to make his cut and all those things. And I think holistically, when your player development is all synced up on an individual part and whole level, then that's when I ultimately think players get better, which is what player development's supposed to be in my world. I think you also have to understand the difference between player development and program development. In season, we're trying to win games. We're trying to get better. So like working on a bunch of new skills at the team's expense and for the sake of losing, that's not the time to work on your bag or try something you haven't really perfected on a grand scale. And then all of a sudden they try something that maybe they're working on, they've worked very hard on, but they're not quite ready to just put out there on a performance level, because otherwise it's going to frustrate their teammates or the coach and ultimately not going to lead to success of the team. So understanding when to and when not to use some of the things we're working on. And that's why I say in season should probably be a little more program development, and off season, yes, there is a time for player development, because I do believe as well, and maybe this is from my pro background, but like you don't want your players to become bored with their player development either. So I always say there should be a today goal, a this year goal, and a 5-year goal. I mean, that was one of the things I had to do, especially at the pro level, just because, you know, rookies and things like that, they're just like freshmen coming into a high school program or freshmen coming into a college. Like, there's still like anytime you move up, your role usually changes. And being able, everybody wants to be the man. But I heard Damian Lillard say when he first got drafted out of Weber State, I wanted to be the type of guy that players wanted to play with, knowing that he was very talented, very successful, a top 5 or 10 pick. And I thought that was a pretty mature way of looking at it. Like, you start by being understanding how to fit your game with your teammates, and then from there, once you get the desired role, then that's when you can go. No, it usually starts with, and this is, I mean, I'm full of all these thoughts or things that I have, but I think we can all as coaches speak to this. The player thinks, play me and I'll show you.
Right.
And the coach always thinks, show me and I'll play you. And what they don't understand is that practice is our best way to increase our probability of success. There are no guarantees in anything. But like, if you're not performing in practice in front of nobody, and if you're making those mistakes, very rarely do those mistakes just go away on a bigger stage against better opponents. So I think that's always the part of the game within the game too, when you're trying to develop and get players to understand, is look, how do I run my own race? How do I be real with where I'm at? How do I consistently improve? How do I struggle with role players. Like, sometimes if you say role players, like, what's your purpose? What is your purpose? How can you help our team? And even if you're I always say this, if you're a bench guy, how do you get in the rotation? If you're a rotation guy, how do you get in the starting unit? And if you're a starting unit, how do you become a primary guy? But ultimately, you have to embrace where you're at in that situation and not have the mindset of, oh, I'll do this if I'm in that. And that's the game within the game. And that's coaching and that's teaching. And ultimately, that to me is probably more about what player development is at, is being able to, obviously, I mean, for me, it's different. Like, I think sometimes as high school coaches or new coaches are still trying to figure out what they're going to teach, how they're going to teach it. I'm at more of a stage where I've been fortunate enough to be around different level of player, worked with unbelievable coaches. I have kind of a feel for the things that I want to do with players. And more importantly, for our situation, I know what Coach Hoiberg's looking for our system. And I think when you're vertically aligned that way, it just makes it easier. I think when you're just trying to throw stuff on a wall and see if it sticks, I think that's where you got to be careful when it comes to player development. Because in the old days, it used to be you tell the player what to do and they do it.
Sure.
You know, and I would still argue probably there's an element of that, depending on the level of respect that you have, you know, with your 9th and 10th graders and things like that. But as they move up, and as again, this is what I dealt with in the NBA, like, at the end of the day, like, the egos, people will say, or think, or stereotype that they were so big, but I would still argue that they were still just people. And at the end of the day, if they felt you were genuine and you knew what you were talking about. And ultimately, if it helped them, then they would do it. But if it was a waste of time, if it wasn't getting better, if you couldn't explain to them why you're doing a drill or be offended if they asked you why you're doing a drill or something like
What's
that.
Reason?
Yes. If you couldn't articulate that or do that, then yeah, sure. Then because you're talking about millions of dollars and forget that it's $1 million. They got one chance, one opportunity to be the best version of themselves. And they're just like every human. If you're helping them and they get them better, they want more of it. And if they're not, they're a little bit more like kindergartners in elementary PE. If your lesson plan's no good, they're going to let you know.
Yes, they will.
And that's how I've kind of developed my player development philosophy. Like, again, if I can't explain to a player why we're doing something, we're not going to do it. But if I can, then, and I always say this, don't waste my time and I won't waste yours.
Yeah.
That's one of my big things. Like, I'm not going to ask you, you know, what outside the lines, what you, as long as it's not affecting what's going on between the lines, you know, that's a little different maybe from high school to college, college to pro, but like there's an element of, I believe this respect, 94, when we step on the court, I want your full attention. And then after that, as long as it's not getting in the way, then I'll let you be you and then I'll be me.
Well, I love the emphasis. You know, a lot of young coaches, I think, or even sometimes if we've been in it a while, we fail to realize that this job is as much or more a relationship. Can you reach that individual job than it is? Can you teach them? Can you show them? Because it's that tension between, I think we always want everybody to be bought in and to be invested and to be on board and content where they are. But at the same time, you want them to aspire. You just said correctly, if it's a bench guy, you know, you should aspire first. Get in where you're one of the guys in that rotation. If you're a rotation guy, you know, what do I have to do? What do you got to get better at to start? So you want them to be, it sounds contradictory, you want them to be content with where they are, because that's going to, for the good of the team. But on a personal level, aspire to something greater, because if you're content only, then you just come to practice and that's my role and that's all it is and that's all I'll ever be. I'll just always be a bench player. But I think we all want kids, young men, young women, if we coach women, to aspire to that higher thing.
Well, that's, I mean, we all want competitive people. The more competitive people we have in our program, the better. You've done this long enough. I've done this long enough, you know, self-starters and things like that. We want that. So there's an element of greatest strengths or greatest weaknesses. So like, yes, it's okay to aspire, but be where your feet are at too. And I think at the end of the day, if the player can embrace the day-to-day, just maximizing whatever they are in whatever situation they're in, then ultimately, maybe even what they wanted was something far less than what they'll get. More doors will open. It's just I have a tough time when players feel like they're playing the victim or that they're getting the short end of the stick. And I know that's life. Like
they're entitled.
Like those are the things. But that's where I mean, basketball's hard, right? I mean, it's tough. It's a grind, but it's also awesome too. And it's a life. It's colleagues at work. It's it's how you deal with people. It's how you deal with adversity. It's how you deal with the highs and the lows and how you navigate. I mean, it's not like golf where if you score 72 and I score 76, you're playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there is a mental challenge to all of it. And and I think, and there's no helmets and there's no, you see all of it. And there's also not really specialists either. It's not like baseball where you can pinch run or kickoff where you can kick. Like the five humans you put out there, you know, you're probably going to have to at some point shoot, pass, dribble and play defense, you know, and rebound. You're going to have to do some level of that, some more than others. So it's that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it challenging. And that's, at the end of the day, like I said, though, you said it though, like the best ones I've been around, the players know that they care. You know what I mean? They have their best intentions. That doesn't mean that it has to be that they coach them soft or anything like that. But like if the player, you know, feels like the coach knows what they're doing and has their best interest, then what they teach them, then that's way less important from there. And I think that's where things, especially young people, they're trying to impress the kid. They're trying to come up with a fancy drill. And that's why I went back to even the fundamentals. Like, no, like player development is, again, do simple better.
Yeah.
Do the things. At the end of the day, if you play more minutes, you'll get more opportunities. But if you turn the ball over, usually your runway is going to be shorter.
Yeah.
And it's hard to develop on the bench. So how do you increase your opportunities to help? And then from there, it's hard to come off the bench and knock down three shots in a game. You know, shoot it at 33% from the three when you have no idea where those three shots are coming from. And sometimes you're in the rotation and out of the rotation of that. And, you know, but over time you develop trust and maybe you get that role where it's 9 threes on a night and now the coach is running actions for you and things like that. So, like, there's so much within the player development. But I think that's, I did learn that in the G League, the D League my year. I had 27 different players in a 50-game season.
Wow.
And all those guys were, none of them wanted to be there, you know, like
no.
They're all aspiring to get to the next level and they're not making a lot of money. And it was a mental grind. A lot of them were coming from nice chartered planes to commercial planes and small buses and going to no arenas and things like that. So you just learn the importance of the mental side and just staying in the moment, not getting too low. And because if you're looking, you know, if you're in the bottom of the well looking up and you don't see the light, that's when development does stall and that's when it doesn't get there. So, like, that's where I really started to even more so keep working on the mental side and keeping guys in the right mind frame. And then after that, control what you can control and let the things out of your control not bear you down, bog you down.
It's good stuff, Coach. What about shooting? I guess I've always thought, because I've heard a lot of people talk about, whether you want to talk about Steph Curry or any of the great shooters historically, but you hear, oh, you know, they're a great shooter because every summer they would make 15,000 shots at game speeds from game, you know, this or that. And while obviously that's important, I've always contended that there's a lot of guys that could make 20,000 shots or at least shoot that many in a summer and never become a great shooter. Because to me, I think there's a giftedness to being elite that for whatever reason is you're born with. Now, I think anybody can become an adequate shooter to where you're saying on a spot up in out three, okay, they can hit 33-34%. If they work hard enough, I think they can, most guys can get to that. But a guy that can shoot from different platforms with all the different arches on the ball, depending on the closeout, that guy is I think, rare. But I don't know. What do you think?
You know, that's a great question when it comes to shooting. Like, there was a lot within what you said there, and I was thinking about a lot of different things. Like, because when it comes, we're talking shooting. Like, if it was as simple as work, 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 I think that almost, like, I almost get defensive off of that too, because, well, don't you think if there was a way to work to a certain level, I would have figured out to be the starting center fielder for the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, but yet there's also the other side of me that says, okay, well, so that means we're born with a predetermined script or whatever that's going to be. And there really doesn't matter what you do. You either have it or you don't. And the truth is probably somewhere in between. Right. You know, I mean,
it's a balance.
I think my boss was one of the best shooters of all time. You know what I mean? I don't know this, but I don't know if he worked any harder or less than I did, or did it any more or less than I did. If you know what I mean? I don't know that. I don't know that. Like, and to your point, whether it's, if it was as simple as if I do this prescription and I'd get this result, well, then there wouldn't be enough spots in the NBA.
Oh, it wouldn't be.
You know,
there'd be a lot more guys shooting 46-48%
from the
3-point line.
So with that, I think when it comes to developing shooting, so with all that being said, like, it's an interesting take to all of it. The when I think about shooting or what it means, so I'd say this. So to me, there's level 1, 2, 3, and 4 shooters. Okay, so level 1 shooters are your catch and shoot. you were kind of talking about it. Level two is you're off the move. All right. Your shakes, your drifts, your hammers, you're moving your center of gravity, things like that. Being able to level one, you know, just shoot the horse shot when it's coming to you. Now you still have a defender. You still have the where the pass comes from, whether it comes from the rim out or from the wing. Like that's, and I can get really in the weeds there. Like these shooting bends are great, but like how many shots are coming on a perfect arc to a perfect spot, you know, to you and at the speed you want it, you know, you get to determine it. So like even that is that's a part of it. Like for me as a former baseball player, you know, it's like understanding, well, there's a time and a place for working on a tee. There's a time and place for working on soft toss. There's a time and place for working off of a pitching machine. And then there's nothing like live pitching, you know, and getting live at bats. So like, so it's the same with shooting too, is how you're looking at it, just being intentional and trying to increase the margin there. So getting back to level one, catch and shoot. Level two is off the move. For me, level three is off the dribble, whether that's off of a ball screen, whether that's an escape. And level four is an action spacer. That's JJ Redick. That's coming off of screens. That's this guy's hit two or three threes. Everybody in the gym knows you're trying to run a play for him. So the precision, the timing, everything's got to be on point. So to your point, being able to manipulate your body to be able to find the rim and knock down shots, you know, because whether it's a 20%, 30%, 40% shooter, if we're talking in those four different levels or those four different quadrants, you got to know what you're dealing with. And then also the frequency too of what those shooters look like. So with that being said, that's how I start to diagnose how we're going to formulate workouts, how we're going to start working on things. I have a whole wall behind you of different players that I coached in the NBA. And a guy I look at right now is David Nwaba, who was a G League guy who was on a really, I mean, he was kind of the first guy Coach Hoiberg gave me when I came back from the G League as an assistant. I had three different players each year and I had their player development. And then I had six teams. I did their scouts. So David was a kid that once started at a D2, went to Cal Poly and had to pay for two different G League tryouts, gets a 10-day with the Lakers, gets another 10-day, and then we sign him in the Bulls in the fall, and coach pretty much says, here you go, you have this guy. We'll probably cut him in 2 weeks. I've had him. non-guarantee, all that fun stuff. And David was an elite defender, elite downhill player, had all the other NBA traits, but shooting, not it. So like for us, with him, we literally just started with corner threes and just trying to let Woody maybe, I struggle with this word, can't. Don't let what you can't do get in the way of what you can.
Right.
You know what I mean? At least, but because I was like, if he could just be playable, if he could knock down a corner three, if at least he could be guarded somewhat, if there was that threat with all the other stuff, you know, maybe he could be an NBA player that could stick. You know, I didn't want him to lose who he was and what his way was, and not just be, if he didn't shoot, he couldn't provide value, but how could we do that? So like his developmental plan was literally just corner threes. Like this was a kid, not a kid, but anymore. But when he first started, we did like his shooting routine, you're building your workout with him, his player development, what that looks like. And in the NBA, you know, you don't have classes. You don't have, I mean, it's truly your job and your profession. So the amount of time to shoot, sure, you could do, but like we would start with mid ranges warming up and then we would get to threes and he had his like pregame cycle. We did his finish and all that. And to hit it, there's a big debate with NBA and all levels of, okay, the value of mid range versus threes and things like that. And that's another whole podcast we could get into too. But like we did mid ranges for, let's say, 2 weeks into the season. And then he finally is like, coach, can we just start with corner threes? Cause I'm going to check into the game. And that's going to be the first shot I take. And if I take these mid-ranges, I miss them, I'm coming out of the game anyways. So like, you know,
there's credit
to him, like understanding where your feet are at, understanding what he needed to work on and how he needed to work on it. Whereas I've had other guys say, well, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant get to take mid-ranges. Why can't I? And then it's the flip side is then I have to say, well, if you were Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, I'd let you take any shot you want. But you're so like, There's a gift to being able to understand who you are and where you're at in your developmental cycle as well. So anyways, to kind of put a bow on that, like to his credit, we started with the corner threes and shoot, he made it all the way through the season. He signed a another one-year deal, and then got a three-year $15 million deal as he continued to work on his shooting. Never was going to be a high volume. It wasn't like he was going to turn into J.J. Redick, but one of the best on-ball defenders. We had a locomotive package where he would just, I mean, he was a blur in the open court and things like that, and it allowed him to have an NBA career. Whereas Zach LaVine was a guy that if I stayed on level one or level two, which was just catch and shoot and spot shots, he'd get bored. It was so easy.
Right.
You know, so doing level three and level four shots with him and understanding how to stimulate him and how to keep him going too and making it competitive, like it was so easy. You know, like if I would have told Zach to shoot, you know, 23 out of 25 on spots at five spots, he was like, that's it. You know, whereas with David, we could have worked on for 5 years, and I don't know if we would have ever got to that.
Correct.
As an example. So, like, I think just being able to diagnose where your shooters are at, what they need to work on, and just to continue to move their needle. Now, I don't believe in a glass ceiling. I would never tell a player what they can or can't do, but we would talk about what their plans and goals are, and we would look at what their shots are that they're getting and their game shots. And I still believe in this. Like, if you take 10 shots, and seven of them are catch and shoot threes, and two of them are at the rim, and, you know, one is end of shot clock mid-range, then we shouldn't spend 90% of our workout on contested mid-range step backs. But think about how many times we see that. Instead of maybe embracing exactly where we're at, okay, right now on those seven catch and shoots, you're shooting 30%. Well, if we get that thing to 35, we get it to 40, you know, things like that. Like,
that's
more
playable.
Right. And it's and you're enhancing everything, and now you're enhancing opportunity, and then now all those things maybe start to grow up. So that's how I kind of, that's where I go back, you know, the day to today, to this year, and a 3 to 5 year goal. It's okay to work on some things that maybe you aren't asked to do right now, because, like, and this is more with college and pro than maybe high school, because in high school you're kind of in a system. I know even high schools have turned into portals a little bit too, but, like, I want to stimulate the players I'm working with too. So it's, we'll work on some things that might be more high level too. I don't want them to become bored with their progress too. But again, if the pie chart is 90% of utopia and only 10% of reality, then that's not adding up. Now, the workout might be great, but then now you're, you know, don't get mad when you're not playing, or flip it the other way too. And that's where I also think individual and player development too needs to be synced up, and it needs to be vertically aligned. Otherwise, the human is caught in between doing what they want to do, but ultimately what they need to do to be successful. So that's
not the same.
No, not always. Not always.
Well, Coach, this has been awesome. Really, as I could talk basketball with you for hours. That's just good stuff. But I want to thank you, and then just say, let's get USC, turn it around. Yep. And that's another home game, right?
Another home game Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. Yep.
And let's get that one. Believe, just love the job you guys are doing, and what you've brought to Nebraska basketball, not just Nebraska University basketball, but the state, and appreciate it. And also just, again, appreciate the time today, and wish you the best as the season winds down.
You know, I thank you so much, Coach. And you hit it early, but, like, I was a high school coach too, you know, and I was a high school coach in Iowa, and I got letters from Iowa State, or I took my teams to Northern Iowa basketball camp. So, like, as long as I'm here, we're going to strive to protect inside out. And the high school coaches in the state, the people in this coaches, that's why we've done the coaching clinic. That's why that's why I write hand letters to the teams in the state tournaments and try to send posters. I mean, we want to be University of Nebraska, Nebraska high school basketball. I mean, that still is the lifeblood of our program, and it should be. And it always meant more, I felt like, as a high school coach when I heard from the people in the state. And sometimes I wish it was more of me to go around, but I do appreciate what you've done for the state. I appreciate what everybody, all these high school coaches are doing. And I, each and every day, am trying my best to just try and make the people of the state proud.
Well, Coach, again, just realize that the coaches recognize that. I hear it often. And so the part of you that there has been there to go around has been good. and it hasn't fallen on deaf ears. So much appreciated, and let's finish the season strong.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
We have free resources available on advisorgameplan.com. If you would like to gain access to our full version of client resources, please contact us today on advisorgameplan.com to explore becoming a client. Also, subscribe today to Thriving Sports and stay up to date with future episodes and more interviews with more coaches. Together, let's be thriving coaches that put the player first in all situations. See ya!